From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Another day, another speech, another president. From somber commander-in-chief to angry campaigner, Donald Trump sometimes gets compared to Jekyll and Hyde for his dramatic tonal shifts between speeches. He calls it smart strategy and says Democrats can't keep up. His critics say it erodes the office of the president, creating a dangerous precedent. This hour on Point, Trump's whiplash rhetoric. You can join us on air or online. What do you make of the president's dramatically different tones in his back-to-back speeches? Do you think it's intentional, strategic, politically skillful, or does he simply lack impulse control and sometimes ignore his teleprompter? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Durham, North Carolina, is David Graham. He covers U.S. politics and global news for The Atlantic, and he recently published a piece headlined, How to Tell Which Donald Trump Will Deliver a Speech. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. David, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you for having me back.
And I think the best way to have you begin to do some dissection for us is to actually listen to some back-to-back speeches in relatively quick succession. So let's go back to last Monday when President Trump was speaking at Fort Myer in Arlington, Virginia, and he presented a very measured speech about his new vision to continue the 16-year U.S. war in Afghanistan. And there was a lot of talk about loyalty and love. Here's what he said last Monday.
Loyalty to our nation demands loyalty to one another. Love for America requires love for all of its people. When we open our hearts to patriotism, there is no room for prejudice, no place for bigotry, and no tolerance for hate.
That was Monday. Now let's go to Tuesday. This is when he had a speech in Phoenix, Arizona.
They make up stories. They have no sources in many cases. They say a source says there is no such thing, but they don't report the facts. Just like they don't want to report that I spoke out forcefully against hatred, bigotry, and violence, and strongly condemned the neo-Nazis, the white supremacists, and the KKK.
That's Trump, of course, talking about the media. That's Tuesday. Here's another piece from that rally in Phoenix on Tuesday, in which he began talking about his promise to build the border wall at all costs, even if it means shutting down the federal government. And he got cheers from his supporters. That's build the wall, build the wall. That's Tuesday. Let's go to Wednesday. This is a speech to the American Legion in Reno, Nevada. Trump back to a more sober tone. And here's what he said on Wednesday.
We are not defined by the color of our skin, the figure on our paycheck, or the party of our politics. We are defined by our shared humanity, by our citizenship in this magnificent nation, and by the love that fills our hearts.
David Graham, psychoanalyze for us. What are we hearing day to day?
So I think there are two big things going on that you can sort of guess where we might see Trump come out. The first thing is, what was his last speech like? If he gave something that was on the wild side in the last speech, he will often be a little bit more restrained in the following one. Like, he's realized he needs to dial it back a little bit more. And the other operative dynamic is whether or not he stays on the teleprompter. When he stays on the teleprompter, as you heard in the Fort Myer speech, he almost sounds a little bit plodding. I mean, it's a little bit labored as he reads through it. And then at the rally in Phoenix, I mean, he's loose, he's having a good time, and you can hear that in his voice. We've heard over and over stories about how when Trump will go a little bit off script, his aides will kind of try to rein him in. And what happens is he can often be reined in for a short time, but he really reacts strongly against that. He doesn't like it. He feels like he's being restrained, and he'll tend to lash out a little bit. And that's why we get this sort of back and forth pattern of, on script and careful and a little bit dull and then wild and raucous.
And have you come to a conclusion about when we see the wild, raucous side and when we see the more somber, sober side?
I think a lot of it has to do with Trump's mood at a given time and the mood in the country. You know, he says that this is about him understanding the difference between settings. And obviously, it's true that politicians do give different speeches in different settings. And you wouldn't expect somebody to speak the same way at a campaign rally as they would speaking to, you know, the American Legion. They're different settings. But I also think that Trump has shown that he doesn't always follow that rule. So we see him, for example, complaining about his treatment by the media and bragging about his electoral win when speaking at the Coast Guard Academy graduation. We see him lobbying armed service members to call their congressmen and complain about things. Those are way out of way out of the normal protocol for those settings. So he doesn't simply follow that. It seems to be more about where he is in a given moment.
After people began to comment last week about how extreme the shifts of tone and emotion were in the speeches, Trump was clearly getting some of that feedback because a few days ago he tweeted about this very thing. And here's what he said in a series of two connected tweets. He said, "The fake news is now complaining about my different types of back-to-back speeches. Well, there was Afghanistan, somber, the big rally, enthusiastic, dynamic, and fun, and the American Legion VA, respectful and strong. Too bad the Dems have no one who can change tones." Do you think that's what's going on? Real political skill, maybe wily political skill, an ability to custom tailor what you say to your audience and know what will energize them?
I think there's an element of that, but I don't think it gets us all the way there. And I think that the description of what he was doing in that rally as enthusiastic, dynamic, and fun is fairly telling. Hillary Clinton may not have been the most charismatic public speaker, but Barack Obama was a pretty good speaker. And when Barack Obama was at campaign rallies and was, having fun and getting loose, he was doing things like impersonating Al Green. When Trump is getting loose on the stump at a rally, he is accusing the press of treason. So, it's not just about fun. It's a strange definition of fun to call that sort of thing, or, really being very misleading about what he'd said about Charlottesville, simply fun. There's something else going on there.
Listeners, we're talking about what we've come to think of in some ways as the President Trump's rhetorical whiplash, that the tone can change so dramatically depending on the day, depending on the crowd. Trump claims it's about adjusting what you say to your audience. Some people think it's something different. Let's go to a caller who wants to weigh in. This is Kiana calling from Pawleys Island, South Carolina. Kiana, welcome to On Point. And what do you think when you hear these dramatic differences in tone?
To me, it's always so troubling, but to me, it's a very stark contrast. You have this metered, rote, controlled, I'm reading from my teleprompter and speaking to the script of what's been written for me. Even the choice of words are different. And then we have what I consider the true Trump, the off-the-cuff, chatty. Sometimes it's always a bit of a narcissistic element, and it's much more loose, and you're shocked by what you're hearing. For example, for me, the Boy Scout speech was troubling. Whether you heard it or whether you read it in transcript, you're like, these were way inappropriate comments that a president should never make. And honestly, I think that's more the real Trump. And it seems to me when he's that controlled, measured, he's reading the teleprompter. And in my mind, it doesn't even sound like him. It sounds like a speech someone else wrote for him.
That's interesting.
And then we see the real Trump.
That's very what you're saying mirrors so much something that I was looking at on Facebook this morning. This was a comment from a listener, Bill Egan, who said this. He was talking about the speeches that come from a teleprompter during the ones that are more off the cuff. And he said the speeches he reads don't fit his vocabulary and sentence structure. You just figure it was written for him and it's not what he actually believes. So again, Bill and Kiana had very similar takes. David Graham, do you think that's true? Are we hearing the real person when he's off the cuff and the manufactured person when he's speaking, or can he be the same person in both cases?
Well, I think he can be the same person, but he's obviously more comfortable when he's kind of improvising and speaking off the cuff. And I think both Kiana and the Facebook commenter have identified something. When he speaks from the teleprompter, he speaks kind of slowly, ploddingly. He tends to not have as much of a dynamic range. There's not as much of an accent on the words. And the other thing that's kind of peculiar, you can see he still doesn't totally feel comfortable at a teleprompter because he'll deliver these sort of ad libs. He'll say, something is happening that's so great, and he'll pause and say, "So great, it's really so great." And so he wants to get this improvisation in there, but he hasn't really figured out how to alternate between a more natural tone and the teleprompter. And as a result, it doesn't sound like him when he speaks. It sounds as though he's reading someone's words. Obviously, all presidents have speechwriters, or all recent presidents have speechwriters, so it's not unusual for them to be working with someone else's words. But I think it's very hard for any speechwriter to really get the tone that Trump does when he's speaking off the cuff. And so as a result, there's no way to write for that, and you get this big diverging tone.
You made an interesting comment earlier that essentially if he makes a mellow speech one day, then he needs to get his energy out the next day. You actually think there might be that kind of pent-up effect?
Oh, I think there is. And we saw this in the post-Charlottesville comments. You know, he came out the day of the violence and he gave this statement. It was a little bit looser and it was highly criticized. And we know now, since then, it's been reported that there was a statement written for him that was much more standard. And instead, he gave this, you know, violence on all sides remark. As a result, he was then marched out the following Monday, where he gave a much more straightforward racism is evil speech, obviously pressured by his staff, who were leaking to the press that they were upset about his first statement. So there he's pent in. And now that energy is pent up, the next day, Tuesday, he comes out and he delivers the statement where he's saying, well, you know, there were good people in with the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists. You can't write them all off, which only got him more criticism. So you see this vacillating effect as he gets hemmed in and then forces his way out.
To what degree, though, do you think there is an element that this could just be a really brilliant chameleon, you know, a guy who really understands how to rev people up when a circumstance requires mellow, when a circumstance requires raucous? I mean, that's certainly a political skill anyone should have, but does Trump have a different understanding of that?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, he does have a really great skill, and these rallies are where he's in his element. The energy at a Trump rally is really something. It's I'm trying to think of things that match it, and there are very few. I think a Bernie Sanders rally was one, some Obama rallies too. And that's a special skill that only some politicians have. What I think is different is the content. So, you know, Obama and Sanders weren't going out accusing people of treason or telling blatant lies. And that's what's different about Trump. It's the content of what he says.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service you've heard about. Its mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to all. They support a more sustainable food system, set the highest standards for ingredients, and make it easy and fun to cook. You decide which recipes and how many meals you want each week. Change, pause, or cancel anytime. Learn more at blueapron.com/onpoint. Go now and get your first 3 meals free plus free shipping at blueapron.com/OP.
This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about President Trump's speeches, a dissection of his chameleon-like rhetoric. Join the conversation. Let us know what you make of the president's loud media-bashing tone during the rally in Phoenix last week. Were you surprised or impressed the next day when he switched to a more somber tone for the American Legion in Reno? You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. With me still is David Graham, a politics and global news writer for The Atlantic. And joining us now from Fairfax, Virginia, is Jennifer Rubin. She writes the Right Turn blog for The Washington Post. Jennifer, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, nice to be here, Sasha.
And with us from New York is Roger Cohen, an op-ed columnist for The New York Times. He recently wrote a piece headlined Truth, Lies, and Numbness. You can find it at our website, onpointradio.org. Roger, welcome back to you too, to On Point.
Thank you, Sasha.
And let's hear a little bit more of President Trump in Phoenix last week. I mean, he was much more combative than we heard at his more somber, mellow speeches. This was him railing against activists and local officials who were working to remove Confederate monuments around the country.
They're trying to take away our culture. They're trying to take away our history. And our weak leaders, they do it overnight. These things have been there for 150 years, for 100 years. You go back to a university and it's gone. Weak, weak people.
And here's a comment from the On Point website. This is Ray writing from Vermont. He says the president has shown that when he sticks to reading what someone wrote for him, he can deliver something fairly focused and coherent. But when left to his own devices, he will ramble on, spouting a litany of personal gripes, attacks upon various people and groups, strings of falsehoods and distortions, not to mention things that are utter head-scratchers. However, as we talked about early in the hour, Trump says he simply has the ability to shift tone depending on audience and mood. Jennifer Rubin, can you give us your take on what you think as you listen to these changing tones?
I think we see Trump as he is, which is narcissistic, angry, vengeful when he goes off the teleprompter. And what strikes me about those speeches is, unlike other politicians who have range, as it were, his is not meant to bond, to laugh, to uplift. It's anger and it's incitement. It is about his personal grievances, people who have done him wrong. When he's on the teleprompter, obviously he's reading a speech that someone wrote, and it's about something. It's about the VA, or it's about Afghanistan. It's not about him. And I think that's the difference. He did get really vilified because of his speech in Phoenix, and one suspects that, if not taken aback, at least his handlers, his generals, were inspired to write a text that they thought he could stick to, and reminding him that he's in front of a group of veterans, not a group of his most loyal followers. So I think range is one thing. That's not what we see here. We see either a controlled Trump or the real Trump, which comes out when he doesn't have a script in front of him, when he says what he believes. And we see the same thing on Twitter.
And Roger Cohen, what do you think?
Well, I agree with what Jennifer said. Clearly, the ranting, angry Trump is the real Trump. I don't know how taken aback he was by what he said in Phoenix. I think he always feels vindicated when he speaks like that. And what did he do right afterward? He turned around and he pardoned Joe Arpaio. And there he is saying, oh, we Americans, the color of our skins doesn't matter. And then he pardons a man who has been racially profiling as a basis for finding illegal immigrants and trying to throw them out. You know, when I listened to the Afghanistan speech, Sasha, I didn't think the policy made any sense. That was one element. There was no diplomatic component to it, and you can't end the war in Afghanistan in the end without diplomacy. But this was clearly Mattis, McMaster, Kelly saying, Mr. President, you have got to, we just can't walk away from Afghanistan. And he looked like an impersonator. This was not even a real human being. It was just somebody who happens to be our president reading some lines that have been stuck in front of him. And then in Phoenix, we see the real Donald Trump. And I think it's interesting that even senior members of the administration, like Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, over the weekend, saying that everybody around the world knows that despite what was said after Charlottesville, the United States stands for the rule of law. We have our values. We believe that everyone is born equal, etc. And then he's asked, okay, well, maybe people believe that in the United States, but what about President Trump? And he said, well, President Trump speaks for himself. I thought that was pretty telling.
And we have that clip, Roger Cohen, so let's hear it out of his own mouth. Again, this is last week when Secretary of State Rex Tillerson was speaking with Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday. Here's the exchange.
I don't believe anyone doubts the American people's values or the commitment of the American government or the government's agencies to advancing those values and defending those values.
And the president's values?
The president speaks for himself, Chris.
And Roger Cohen, why do you find that so noteworthy?
Well, this is President Trump's Secretary of State, and he's disavowing the president. That's pretty extraordinary. You'd think either Secretary of State Tillerson would walk, or following that, the president would reprimand him severely, maybe relieve him of his post. He's supposed to represent the president. And what we're hearing, in effect, from Secretary Tillerson is that the president is freelancing. He's out there on his own. He says whatever comes into his head. And we have to live with it. I'm extrapolating a little, but you know that's the gist of it. Why else would you say it? And the fact is, we have a president who is mean, who is nasty, as Jennifer was saying. And the genuine Donald Trump is not the man who says that all Americans are born equal, the color of our skin doesn't matter. No, it's the man who says there were some pretty great guys who were walking alongside those white supremacists and Nazis, and there was blame on both sides. The equivocating post-Charlottesville president, who we know deep in himself really believes that white lives matter.
Let's hear what some listeners think about this. Let's go to Stephen calling from Syracuse. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Sasha. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. So let us know what you think. What's your own sort of analysis of this?
Oh, your guests are right on the money. He's not human. He is a narcissistic liar, and you can't believe anything that comes out of his mouth. And He has these generals around him that I don't know how they're even following this guy. They should all just resign. But he's been doing this since day one on a consistent basis, and he never lets up. And when he gets angry, he's out of control. And that's pretty obvious from his speech in Phoenix. He brings a lot of anger, and I'm worried. I'm just extremely worried that he's going to lead us into something a lot worse than what we were into before. America's always been great, and he's making it sound like America's not a great country. And that, in general, is that he has no values. He has no ethics. He has. I don't mean to bash him, but I do mean to bash him because he deserves it. And his 30-something percent of his followers is getting lower. He's not going to have when he next time votes come up. He's going to lose a lot of his followers except for the hardcores.
Stephen, thanks for calling. Good to hear that perspective. Interesting to hear it. Let's go to Chris calling from Columbus, Wisconsin. Chris, welcome to On Point.
Hi. Hi, Sasha. Great show as usual.
Thank you. And what do you think as you listen to President Trump change so dramatically in his public speeches day to day?
Well, I got to tell you that I was a very hesitant Trump supporter during the election. But since the election, I have grown more and more supportive. I actually enjoy the fact that he pushes back when he gets unfairly criticized. I am a radical egalitarian. My first roommate in the Marine Corps was a first-generation American from Mexico, and the guy that took me under his wing to help me was a black guy from inner city Atlanta. And color should not matter at all. So his initial response to Charlottesville was spot on. Hate in one group is no worse than hate in another group. And I think he was unfairly criticized for it. And I think that it was about time that a Republican stood up and pushed back on this politically correct criticism from the media, and that's what we want. And it's and I think that Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell better get on board here, because more people are actually saying, hey, this guy's actually doing what we elected him for, and it's a refreshing thing to see.
Then when you hear such dismay coming from the previous caller, what would you say to that caller about that sense of distress?
Well, he is actually correct in his observation. But that same observation could be made of Hillary. However, Hillary was not as transparent about it.
Which observation do you mean? Correct in which observation?
About being angry and narcissistic and vengeful.
You think Donald Trump is those things?
I do. I think Hillary was too. Just she was more measured about it.
But you support Trump despite being able to say, I believe he has those qualities.
I do, because there, unfortunately, in our political system, those were our two options.
Thank you for that.
I voted for Alan Keyes first.
Chris, thanks for calling. Interesting for us to hear that as well. Jennifer Rubin of The Washington Post, what do you think as you listen to those callers with totally diametric takes?
Well, I think as to the last caller, it's never nice to hear the excuse that some of my best friends are African-American. It does not make one an egalitarian. And certainly Trump personifies racism, and he always has, from his days when he cheered the Central Park Five and he discriminated in housing when he was a landlord, to the pardon of an avowed racist, Joe Arpaio, to his remark that there are fine people marching with the Nazis, to his comments during the campaign that Mexicans are murderers and criminals. The man is a racist. It's no longer, I think, possible to maintain an intellectually honest position that he understands and embraces equality under the law, and that he recognizes his role to unite the country. He is divisive, and he invariably comes down on the side of the oppressors,
not the oppressed.
Jennifer, thanks for that. I want to bring David Graham back in for a little bit. David, we heard the previous caller say that he likes that this is a president that pushes back. And, you know, we often see him, particularly on Twitter, calling out people by name, criticizing them for things he says they have or haven't done. I mean, some people might think, yes, call someone out when they haven't done something. Do you think that there is a case to be made that this is a person who has decided, forget political correctness, I'm just going to say exactly what I think because our system was dysfunctional in a way that requires it, requires a radically different approach?
Well, I think it's certainly true that he has decided to forswear political correctness, and he thinks it doesn't get you anywhere. And I think that plain talking appeal really attracted a lot of supporters. You know, I spoke to a lot of people on the campaign trail and since, I suppose, who were Trump supporters who were uncomfortable with certain things he would say or would sometimes say, you know, I wish he would dial it back a little, or I wish he didn't attack Kizer Khan or you know, you name it. But, you know, he says it like it is, and I really appreciate that. And I think that's a very common feeling. The problem that I see, and in particular with the way Chris laid it out, is if it is true that Trump was, you know, being honest and straightforward in his statements about Charlottesville at the beginning, why then did he switch a couple days later and give a statement that walked them back? And why in Phoenix did he censor himself and leave out the most controversial part of his statements, the on all sides? You know, he plays at being entirely forthright. But if you then look into what he says, there's often untruths rolled in. There's omissions, and he is censoring himself in a way that suggests maybe he understands that there is something that is politically correct to say in the literal sense, if not in the sort of euphemistic way it's come to be used.
Jennifer Rubin, would you weigh in, since we will have to say goodbye to you after this segment, to let us know whether you feel like Trump is imperiling his base at all, or his supporters, hardcore supporters, with him, no matter what he says or does?
He seems to have lost just about everybody other than his hardcore supporters. And we forget that when Richard Nixon was finally forced to resign, he too had about a quarter of the country still supporting him. So people don't like to be reminded that they've been conned, and they don't like to be reminded that they've voted incorrectly. So there will be some people who stick to him to the bitter end, whatever that end is. But we do see erosion, not only among independents, certainly Democrats were never on his side, but amongst more moderate Republicans. And you see, although he denies it, that the support that he obtained during the campaign is not what it was. And of course, you would imagine that those people, unlike the last caller, who were sort of giving him the benefit of doubt or really couldn't bring themselves to vote for Hillary, now see him in his full flowering, in his full racist, out of control, ignorant self, and they're taken aback.
Let's hear another caller. We have someone calling in from Nashville. This is Kevin. Kevin, welcome to On Point. Tell us what you think about the very different, dramatically different speeches we can hear from Trump day to day.
Okay. Hi, Sasha. Good show. And I'm sitting here kind of chuckling to myself because a lot of the commentators are, again, they don't get it. They're expecting Trump to act like a politician. That's not why he was elected. You know, most of the constituency does not want someone who's another politician. And also, you know, I'm chuckling again that, you know, the polls are saying, you know, his base is eroding. Well, these are the same polls that said he wasn't going to be elected. So, you know, it's like we see through all this, and I think, you know, the pundits just don't get it yet. They don't understand Trump because they keep trying to put him into a box. And he was elected because he doesn't go into the box.
And do you like like Trump's style? Do you personally like his style?
The more he's not in the box, the more people are reinforced that they made the right decision by electing him. He's a mixed bag, and, you know, but that's what you get when you don't have a politician. And personally, I would rather a Trump than a teleprompter in chief, who, you know, everything's scripted. I love that Trump goes off script, and, you know, I like that.
That's Kevin from Nashville. Thank you very much for that perspective. And Jennifer Rubin, a blogger for The Washington Post, thank you for having been with us. David Graham and Roger Cohen, stay with us. We're discussing the president's dramatic shift of tone between and among his various speeches. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. We're dissecting President Trump's speeches, his frequently shifting rhetoric, and how that affects his presidency. Join the conversation. Which of the president's speech styles most resonate with you? The over-the-top campaigner, the sober commander-in-chief? Do you see a skillful political strategy to his shifts of tone? And what do you think explains the unpredictability of his speeches? You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. With me is David Graham, politics and global news writer for The Atlantic, and Roger Cohen, op-ed columnist for The New York Times. And David and Roger, I want to play a little piece of sound from Trevor Noah, the host of the late-night comedy show The Daily Show. This is him speaking on Thursday night about this very topic.
Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. All politicians adjust their performance for different crowds, right? Obama speaks differently in a black or a white crowd. Bush spoke differently to farmers and bankers. Ted Cruz speaks differently to people than the pile of human heads in his basement that he says are his friends. It always happens. But Trump is different. When he talks to different audiences, even within just a few days, he doesn't just tweak his style, he changes his message.
Roger Cohen of The New York Times, is there any level at which you think there's truth to the theory that what we see is Trump's ability to move fluidly among and between different audiences, strike different tones depending on the subject matter? Do you think that's what we're seeing as political skill?
I think Donald Trump has uncanny instincts. He's president of the United States. That's no small achievement. And he became president because he intuited, put his finger on, with the help of Steve Bannon, an anger in the country, particularly among blue-collar white voters. And they came out en masse, voted for him, and very poor campaign from Hillary Clinton, and he became president. So, yes, he does have these instincts, but he has no instinct for what it is to be president of the United States. He is not worthy of the office. He is unfit for the office. Look, Sasha, I want to respect my president. I think most of your viewers want to respect our president. He is our president. Our instinct is to respect him. But this man very often simply makes it impossible. He sullies, he besmirches his office day after day. What are we to make of a president who lies on such a regular basis? That column of mine, brief column that you mentioned at the beginning, Truth, Lies, and Numbness, came about because I was suddenly appalled by myself. Last month, I'd been listening to the president boasting of how he'd received congratulatory calls from the president of Mexico and from the head of the Boy Scouts. It was a lie. The calls never happened. They never took place. They were a pure invention. And then even more ominous in a way, there is Sarah Huckabee, press spokeswoman in the White House, asked if these were lies, saying, well, no, not really. I don't think they were lies. And you know what? I found myself shrugging. It had become commonplace to have the president lying, to have that being said in the White House, had become normal. And that's what's dangerous.
And Roger Cohen, that's an important piece of this, because you have talked about what you view as the wearing down effect, you know, that we kind of lose our ability to continue to be outraged when the outrage is just relentless, at least if you view it as outrage. What do you think is the long-term effect of that wearing down?
Well, I think it's dangerous, Sasha. I think when the distinction between truth and falsehood withers, then democracy and freedom die, wither with it. Because if you have a completely disoriented population that increasingly is unable to distinguish between what is true and what is false, then the only source of truth in the end becomes that of the voice, as Donald Trump put it, the all-powerful a leader. And I think Donald Trump's instincts are very autocratic. I don't think, as we saw with the Opaya pardoning, and many other instances, his insulting of federal judges and so on, I don't think he really believes that we're all equal under the law. I don't think he really does believe in American values. And that's why you have his Secretary of State saying now that he speaks for himself. So, look, I think American institutions are strong. The press, the judiciary, we're fighting back. But when I hear callers like David and Chris earlier, who are kind of thrilled by his off-the-cuff comments. Is that really enough? I mean, he hasn't even passed any element, major element, of his legislative agenda yet because he's freelancing. He cannot pursue policy in a coherent way.
You know, to that point, we got a comment on our website saying, in the end, it will all come down to whether his personality, his unique approach, translates into political effectiveness and uniting a divided country. This would mean passing legislation of net benefit to those who voted for him and the country at large. So I think that is ultimately the measuring stick. Let's go to another caller. This is Frank calling from Miami. And Frank, what do you think when you hear Trump change his speeches so radically from day to day?
Well, you know what? All politicians do that. But the main reason why I call is to give a message to the news media. You know, every day that goes by, I see a different member of the news media crying about how they're being beaten up by Trump and calling them fake news and all that. Well, guess what? You guys work very hard to find yourself in the position that you're finding yourself right now where nobody believes you and nobody pays attention to what you have to say. So that's my comment.
So you obviously agree with President Trump and his criticism of the press. Do you think the press deserves the criticism he
absolutely.
What do you?
Absolutely. They have worked very hard. They were biased. They continue to be biased. They're nothing more than an arm of the Democratic Party, which, in my opinion, does not have the best intentions for this country.
And, Frank, what do you think about the different speeches? What's your take on that, the somber ones versus the ones that can be very antagonistic?
Mention to me one politician that doesn't do that. Okay?
Well, President Trump takes it to an extreme. This is an extreme version of...
Obama used to do that. Obama used to do that. Bush used to do that. Clinton used to do that. They adjust themselves according to wherever it is that they're talking.
For you, there's no distinction in how Trump does it versus previous presidents?
No. The only distinction between Trump and the other presidents is that he tends to speak more off the cuff than the rest of them. But they're all the same. You know what? In fact, I tell you what, it's very refreshing to find someone that stands up and tells people off the way that he does.
Frank, thanks for that perspective. David Graham, your thoughts about that caller?
Well, it's interesting. The caller actually seems to disagree with Trump, who claims that nobody else is able to modulate like this. He's saying, in fact, everyone modulates like this, which I think is true. But again, I mean, this is not about just the modulation and the difference in tone. The difference in tone is striking. It's a little bit – you get a little bit of whiplash. But I think, you know, what is more significant is what he does in within the context of that tone. And what that is you know, lying profusely. You know, we keep hear people saying, well, you know, you guys in the media don't get this. And he, you know, he tells it like it is. But what we see is him blatantly contradicting himself and the truth. And you don't need a reporter to do that. All you need to do is look at the difference in the statements he makes. It's about the substance as much as it is about the tone.
We've had several callers say they think it's refreshing to hear someone speak off the cuff, not act like a traditional politician, push back at what they at people who they think attack them. Let's go to Corey calling from Atlanta. Corey, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Sasha. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What do you think as you listen to this show?
Off-the-cuff Trump, as compared to scripted Trump, I think the guy's just selling dreams. He tells people what they want to hear. And it's his old phrase for that is that you're selling dreams. If you're dating a woman you're lying, basically. You're plotting. Well, you're selling the dreams to get to where you want to go. I think he does that the same way from Charlottesville to Senate to Arizona. He caters that speech to go with the people that he's facing. So he doesn't really face that much backlash. He can lie, particularly to this crowd, different than he can lie to this crowd, different than he can lie to this other crowd. But it's all selling dreams. The guy's not genuine, and he proves this over and over again. He's not a politician. He's unorthodox. And he's one of our... You can say that the presidency is office that's on the pedestal. Now, we don't have royals in this country. So, I mean, he would be that guy that you go to in a terrorist attack or like Houston right now. When you see that these disasters happen, people look for guidance. They look for direction. And we have a president that will just sell you a dream, basically tell you what you want to hear. He's not going to act on anything that's going to get him, you know, blackballed or looked at funny, but he's just He just plays the middle.
And do you think that will ever ever be his downfall, or will his supporters always be his supporters no matter what, and will always have this massive divide?
It's inevitable. If I lie to my wife constantly, I'm going to end up divorced. If I lie to my boss at my job, I'm going to end up looking for a job. Is this a matter of checks and balances? It's a matter of time. We got three more years of this, and in the first year, we haven't even finished the first year yet. So, you know, he's got people talking about politics again. He's got people riled up, which is great. I love spirited debates and conversations, but some of this is just people being misled, and they don't realize it. And there are going to be a lot of people left behind at the end of the day when he gets to his agenda and not yours.
Corey, thank you for that. That's really, really important perspective to hear. Roger Cohn of The New York Times, one of the things that Corey said is that we look to presidents for guidance. We're not getting that from this president in his view. What do you think is the long-term effect of that on the office of the president? Is this all fixed? If you have the perspective that it needs fixing, is it all fixed when a new president come in? Is there a lingering after effect?
I think there's probably a lingering after effect. You know, the presidency today is not what it was when Barack Obama left office. We have a president now who tweets all the time, who runs the presidency like he's still on the campaign trail, and as I said, who lies, tells. I'd like to ask Frankie, I think it was, who called, you know, who said we in the press have created all this for ourselves. Sure, we make mistakes, but most journalists work in good faith. And what are we supposed to do if the president lies demonstrably, straight up? We're the dishonest, in quotes, media, and we have a president who is lying day after day. Are we supposed to ignore it, pretend it didn't happen, not report on it? I don't know what the answer to that question is, but in answer to your question, Sasha, I don't think the office recovers quickly from this, if ever. And maybe that's, you know, technology has changed everything. Why shouldn't it change the nature of the Oval Office? But the fact that we need to look to our president to represent and incarnate certain values that we, for example, want our kids to have. You're not dishonest. You're not narcissistic. You're not mean. You're not nasty. You're not racist. Certain fundamental things. This is an office. It's the highest office of many things. And one of them should be ethics.
Let's go to Cindy, calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Cindy, welcome to On Point, and tell us what you think about all this.
Hi, Sasha. Thanks for taking my call. I'm frustrated because everybody's getting down on the president, and, I mean, literally, he can't take a step to right without being told he should make a left. And as for politicians and causing, you know, saying he's lying and this and that, most politicians are basing all their campaigns on some sort of lie or another. You know, and then as for the news media, everybody is in such a big rush to get these stories on the air that they don't always get the facts. They don't get them right, or they just totally ignore them. You know, I mean, 9/11, I understand. That was a big thing. Everybody had to get that information on the radio and on the news so people saw and understood what was going on. But then all of a sudden you got numbers going anywhere from 500 to 5,000 people dead. They haven't even gone into the buildings, had a chance to check anything out.
Well, right. I mean, changing situations, when it's a fast-moving news event, those are hard. We certainly are going to see shifting numbers. I want to go back to something you said. You said that, you know, all politicians base their campaigns on lies. Are you saying that you believe Donald Trump lies, but you consider it a forgivable offense?
I'm not saying I believe he lies because I don't consider him as a politician. I consider him as a businessman. And he's doing what he thinks is right for America.
Do you think he's truthful? Do you think he's truthful?
I think so. It's just that he speaks what he thinks. And most politicians follow that little line. They can't say anything to the left or the right. They got to say exactly what they are told to say. And he's going at his pace. And, you know, sometimes he does show the respect all the time if he's talking to veterans or elderly or whatever. But as in the case of the riots down in Charlotte, you're going to tell me that no, absolutely nobody on the KKK or whatever groups that are good people. Some of those people went there in the matter of demonstrating, but in no idea and no plans to have any violent reactions or violent actions. And even I feel sorry for the poor lady that was killed. I really do. I think she's a wonderful person. She's a good person. But somehow or another, the two groups got together, and there was an argument and a fight, and then the idiot with the car.
Cindy, thank you for that. That's Cindy from Madison. Roger or David, I can hear one of you taking a breath wanting to speak. Which one of you is trying to get in here? Roger, Roger, you want to weigh in?
We're breathing, Sasha. We're breathing.
Just regular breathing. Any thoughts about the last caller, Cindy?
Well, it came to my mind when she said again that he doesn't, you know, he doesn't really lie. He just is who he is. I mean, yeah, he came up with the Bertha myth, President Obama. He didn't come up with it, but he signed on to it that the president wasn't, President Obama wasn't really born in the United States. I mean, he has a real issue with honesty. He's incapable of it. He can't do it. And I think what you have right now are a bunch of people around him, mostly ex-generals, who believe that the president can't conduct himself in this way. And that's why you've seen the departure of Bannon, the departure of Gorka, and they're trying to hold him to a more classic vision of what the presidency is. But I think they have a case of a man who cannot do that, who is incapable of it.
And I think certainly what we heard from Cindy is we also have a man who has some incredibly enduring supporters. So it's a fascinating debate.
Absolutely.
Roger Cohen, op-ed columnist for The New York Times, thank you for having been with us.
Thank you, Sasha.
And David Graham, also to you, politics and global news writer for The Atlantic. Thanks for being with us for the hour.
Thank you so much.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.